Stay with us and we're going to show you how to take dead aim.
Take dead aim.
The importance of taking dead aim.
Welcome to Taking Dead Aim, a show dedicated to the game of golf and the people who play it in the Carolinas and around the world. Taking Dead Aim is a presentation of RBC Wealth Management and Academy Sports and Outdoors. And now, here's your host, a man who once described Caddyshack as an awesome documentary, Charlie Nance.
Welcome back. Once again, we're Taking Dead Aim, presented by the Charlotte office of RBC Wealth Management, located in the beautiful tree line of South Park and Academy Sports and Outdoors. I'm Charlie Nance on Twitter at @CLT_golf guy. Well, this is it. The end of the 2018 major championship season on the PGA Tour as the PGA Championship being contested at Belrive Country Club in St. Louis. And this is the end of the PGA Championship being the fourth and final major each year. Starting next season, the PGA moves to May. And I'm hopeful this works out. That being said, there's also a big part of me that hopes it snows in late April in New York, and by the second week in May, Bethpage Black is not ready to host a major. Nothing against the course or New York. It's just that if you're going to make a move like this, you have to take weather into account. And the Northeast in spring, sketchy at best in terms of predicting weather. Also, this means that the Players' Championship is moving back to March. Everyone with a title at the PGA Tour's home office is touting this as the best thing since sliced bread. Anyone remember what prompted the move to May in the first place? Anyone? Anyone? Well, that would be sketchy weather in March in North Florida. So we'll see. Anyway, today we're all about what used to be known as Glory's Last Shot, the 100th PGA Championship, with Ron Green Jr. of the Global Golf Post and Charlotte Observer, John Patrick, syndicated host of the Augusta Golf Show, and we begin with a conversation I had earlier this week with Taylor Zarzer and a surprise guest, Mark Carnevale of SiriusXM and PGA Tour Radio.
Before we talk about this week in the PGA, I want to take a step back. We haven't spoken since Carnoustie. And, you know, there are some people who have infamous sports moments and they've let it define their lives in a negative way. Bill Buckner of the Cubs, Isaiah Robertson of the Rams immediately come to mind. Perhaps the greatest moment of sports infamy, much less golf infamy, in my lifetime was Jean Vandeveld at the Open in Carnoustie in 99. He was on site. I know you met with him. And by all accounts, he's just a lovely person with that whole incident in perspective. What were your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, he's a delightful guy, and it was one week of his life. It wasn't his entire life, and that's really the way he operates. I mean, every single day he has more questions about how you're doing than you do about him. He's one of my favorite people, and he at least lives outwardly in public as if that episode doesn't bother him. I mean, he has regrets about how it went, but he doesn't seem to have any regrets about the life that he's living in. I think if he can get over it, I think the rest of us probably should, too.
I just think it's amazing because, you know, he has to be asked about that every day of his life. And I don't know. I don't know if I know I'm not. I'm not a strong enough person to get over that.
Yeah. And it can, I would imagine, at times get a little old, but he doesn't show it. It was, as we were discussing it on SiriusXM, it was playing in the background on the televisions in the media center as we were talking, and he didn't seem to be bothered by that. You know, he says he has regrets, and he has regrets about how he played his third shot towards the green, and of course he hit it into the burn. I would challenge him on how he played his second shot and why he didn't just wedge it out to the fairway, because I mean, I think he has a 100% chance of winning the claret jug if he does that. Just going over and standing in front of the 17th tee where he played that second shot from, I still just don't understand the thought process there. But hey, you know what? We are talking a whole lot more about Jean Vandeveld 19 years later than we are about Paul Lowry. And Paul Lowry overcame a 10-shot deficit and won the Open Championship 45 minutes from where he lived and stayed in his childhood home and won the Open Championship, which is an amazing story. But that has certainly been dwarfed by Vandeveld through the years.
It's been a long time since there was a major championship with Tiger Woods on the leaderboard on a Sunday. What was it like, just the electricity in the air, when it only lasted for a hole, but the charge lasted the entire front nine? What was it like for you?
Well, I don't know that it was the most professional moment in media history, but when it happened and he took the outright lead, dozens of reporters in the media center stood up and took a picture of the board. I mean, that's how big of a deal it was. And I think plenty of us thought nothing like that would ever happen again. So the fact that it did was noteworthy, and why so many people across the world were watching, and the ratings were astronomical for the event. But it made me even further believe this is going to happen at some point. He's going to win a tournament or two again in his life, and who knows, maybe it's a major championship. I do think that's his best chance, given the setup of an Open Championship, and just given, at least at this point in his career, I would say the lack of trust he has, especially in the clutch, in some of the shots that used to be so automatic for him. His iron play, I think, is as good as anybody right now on tour, but his wedge play leaves a little bit to be desired, and I still think he has he doesn't have total confidence with where it's going off the tee, especially when he's hitting a driver or a three wood. But I think he's had a really good year. I think if you go back to the end of 2017, I think this would be a really good projection for him, and I expect him to be on the Ryder Cup team.
Look, I think this whole year has been a miracle, to be honest with you, as far as Tiger's concerned. But last week he had the look of a guy who hadn't had much traveling tournament golf in 4 years and looked to just be running out of gas. Maybe I'm looking or seeing too much into it. I think, you know, he's worked his way to number 50 in the world. But is he any better than that? Or is this about what Tiger Woods is?
You know what I'm going to do here is, I don't know if this has happened before on your show, Chuck, but I'm actually going to yield the floor to my colleague, Mark Carnevale, who was the 1992 Rookie of the Year on the PGA Tour, and I'll be calling the PGA Championship with in the tower, because I think his perspective is probably better than ours on that.
Well, it's interesting. I think, you know, with Tiger, there's a lot of unknowns. I mean, we know what he was prior to the surgeries and prior to this, you know, basically 5 years of very little golf and just not knowing whether he would play again. Certainly the talent, he's never lost the talent. I think when you look at Tiger and you try to understand, you know, what a player of his caliber deals with, I think it without question, at age 42, there's limitations in the sense of he can't play and do the things he used to do. But he also, mentally, I mean, for everything you've been through, everything he's dealt with, that's an added factor. And while he sits there and says, hey, he wants to compete, and I do believe he can win tournaments, I do believe there is a chance he can win major championships. If you grind and grind and grind, with what he's done in his whole career, and you're not getting the results, and certainly he's been in contention this year, and that has got the juices flowing. But he has other things he's got to deal with. Like you said in his press conference yesterday, he's 42 years old now with four back surgeries. And let's not forget the knee and the other things he's dealt with. It's tough. And I wouldn't say that he is going to be stuck in a top, you know, a 50 rank in the world. I think it can get better, but it's going to come down to, does he want to deal with the things, I think, to get back to the top. You've got so many other players are there, and it's a lot more volatile now. Is that something he truly wants to do? And I think we'll see that as we go through this process. But he's certainly been impressed. He's not only impressed himself, I think, but I think he's impressed the golfing world what he's been able to do so far.
Mark Carnevale and Taylor Zarzer from SiriusXM and PGA Tour Radio, our guest Taking Dead Aim. Were you more surprised at Tiger seemingly forgetting how to close the deal when he got in that position, or by the way Jordan Spieth, the defending champ with the lead, just imploded on Sunday?
Well, I think it's just the pressure of trying to win a major championship. Both of them dearly want to do that. Obviously, Jordan at a young point in his career, trying to get his, you know, his fourth major championship. Tiger trying to do that. I think the factor in the and the pressure, and it's more internal, I think. It's not the exterior pressure. I mean, Tiger Woods doesn't owe anyone anything. He doesn't owe the game of golf anything for 14 major championships, 79 wins. Jordan Spieth either. But they want to be recognized as the best. And I think it just happens until you've been there. And it hasn't happened in a long time for Tiger. When you say, what is it, 2000, was it, since he has competed and really been there in a major championship, was it 2012 or 13, somewhere where he was in the top 10 at one point? That's been a while. Jordan Spieth, you know, got there real early, got those major championships real early in his career, and his expectations are higher. I think what Tiger has, he knows what his expectations are. I'm not so sure he knows exactly what his body and his mind can deal with right now.
Yeah, I think that's really well said. And I think that I was more surprised, Chuck, by the fact that Jordan Spieth played the way he did on Sunday, but there's an explanation for it. I mean, if you look at what he's done in the last 12 months and some of the bad patterns he's gotten into, and clearly the putting has not been the same consistently all season as it's been in the past. So there's a reason for it, but just given the way he had performed the first 3 days, I guess that was a bit more surprising. But I think Carney's dead on with what he said about Tiger and the pressure that he's dealing with now, and how much more difficult that is to deal with the older you get than it maybe was earlier in his career. Another factor, too, is his children get it. For the first time, they get it. And they are, by a wide margin, the most important things to him in his life. And there they were waiting for him on the 18th, just behind the 18th green. And I spoke to him right afterwards, and he had tears in his eyes talking about the embrace that he had with them and how much he wants to win and have them be there to celebrate that with him, because they have never really understood how, I mean, they're starting to understand it, and they see, as he said, all the YouTube videos and what have you, but all they know is an injured father. And, you know, so I think that he's putting a lot of pressure on himself in those moments for that to happen too. But it was crazy to see the way that all unfolded on Sunday. That was a day at Carnoustie we won't forget.
You know, Jordan Spieth has become somewhat of an enigma for me. I think we all got spoiled with that uncanny 2015 season. But if we look at this year, which has been meh at best, he's still a decent drive on the 18th hole at Augusta away from perhaps getting in a playoff or winning the Masters. He has the lead, the 54-hole lead at the Open Championship at Carnoustie. It could have gone from a nothing season to a great season with just a couple of swings of the golf club. And it's like you said, his putting's been worse than ours, Taylor. I mean, you know, he's just a big mystery to me right now.
Well, Carney, you know, you've been out there all year watching him.
It's been interesting. I mean, we still forget, I think, we tend to forget that Jordan just turned 25, if I'm not mistaken, and had a lot of wins and a lot of success early in his career. And it was expected, not only by him, but by players and people that follow the game. I think it's mental with him. I think he has put a lot of pressure on himself. He sees not only what he has done in his career, he's seeing what his buddies are doing. You see him, you know, it was at one point it was Justin Thomas was Jordan's buddy. Now Justin Thomas is kind of leading the way. I think what happens, look, I mean, we all strive to get better. I wonder, do we try to get better at the things we need to get better at? Or do we try to get better at what everybody tells us we should get better at? People talked about how Jordan didn't drive the ball far enough, and he didn't hit enough greens. Well, he's doing that, and you lose something. So you have to manage your time. And look, I mean, I don't know if anyone works harder than Jordan. I think he works real hard. But I think it goes back to his expectations, like every golfer does. They expect an awful lot, and there's nothing wrong with that. But sometimes it's hard to, you know, reach those expectations. And I think it's a lot of it is internal pressure, because I don't believe you lose the ability to play golf or how to swing the golf club. I think you start factoring all the pressures of the outside, and that has an effect on things, just like it does with Tiger and everybody else. It is dealing with those internal pressures and expectations. How do you manage it? How do you just keep putting yourself in that position? Because you're going to – I mean, Tiger said it best. You fail more than you succeed at this game. But you have to learn from those failures. An example of that would be certainly Dustin Johnson, a guy who's failed at the highest level of major championships numerous times. Now, he's only got one major championship. But I think he's been able to put that out of his mind, and he goes and he plays golf. And that's all at the end of the day you could do. You got to go play, and whatever happens, happens.
Thank you for bringing up Dustin Johnson. Mark Carnevale and Taylor Zarzer with SiriusXM and PGA Tour Radio, our guest taking Dead Aim. You mentioned JT. He's got to be on the short list this week. But DJ's on the verge of my stone cold lock for the Hall of Fame. He's a major away from number two. He's a win away from number 20. And when he's on, I think right now he's got the most complete game on tour. U.S. Open champ Brooks Koepka stalking the grounds of Bellerive with a tremendous amount of confidence. It's his body language, just looking at the TV and in some of his practice this week, he looks like a guy on a mission. Of those two, who do you like more, and are either your favorite?
Yeah, I think if everybody's equal, if everybody's playing their best, I think Dustin Johnson is not only ranked number one in the world, but he's the best player in the world. And to like what Mark said about how when you work, you obsess so much about one part of your game, another leaks oil. That hasn't happened with DJ. He has improved his wedge game remarkably in the last couple of years, yet he's still as good a driver of the golf ball. He can repeat that incredible 330-yard plus cut that he hits down the fairway and aims at the, you know, left corner of the first cut of rough and hits it back into the middle of the fairway over and over and over again while he's improved his distance control significantly, especially inside 120 yards. And because of that, I think he's the top guy. Koepka is on a short list for sure, but I think the fact that DJ has won so much more than Brooks has would lead you to believe that he's the first person that I would go with. I don't know about you, Carney.
I think so. I don't think there's any question right now. That used to be said about Rory McIlroy. Rory's on top of his game, he's unbeatable. I think Rory struggles with his wedge game. He spoke about it yesterday. But with DJ's on, I mean, I followed him all 4 days at the RBC Canadian Open. He didn't putt all that well, and he won by 3 shots. I followed him on Sunday last week for the first 10 holes. He's 700 through 10 and didn't get the ball in the fairway on the back nine, so wasn't able to really improve on that. He is a complete player without question. And people talked about, well, what was his brother Austin? Is that the right guy in his bag? You know, at the end of the day, you have to go play golf. No one can play it for you. No one can read your putts for you. You have to execute it. And I think right now, without question, even though he's only got one major championship on his resume, we know that's important to him. I think DJ, hands down, is the favorite if all things are equal.
Yeah, I think the whole caddy thing's overrated. I mean, it didn't matter if Nicholas had Angie or Gia or me on the bag, for crying out loud. Get y'all out of here on this. With the exception of Charlotte last year, I think we just had a brief rain shower on Friday during the PGA. It seems this championship is just soaked each and every year. Bellerive is completely waterlogged as we're recording this. You brought up Rory McIlroy. My one thing about Rory is he is the mutter of all time. If it is a sloppy track, he tends to perform very well. However, Carney, you brought it up. His wedge game last week at Firestone was abysmal. The wedge he hit into 18 at Carnoustie was a 15 handicap wedge at best. Can he contend without that wedge game?
Well, I think so. And the thing that's going to help are certainly the softness and the receptiveness of the greens. Plus, it's a golf course that really fits his eye. It's a lot of right to left on it. Most of the guys like to work it left to right. Yeah, I mean, I think he's going to be one of the favorites without question. As you said, if it's about carrying the ball and not having to play the ball to land on the spot and chase it somewhere, I think Rory is without question, certainly without question, he's one of the most talented players in the game. He won earlier this year at the Arnold Palmer Invitational. A lot of expectations from him. It's been a while since he's really won a major championship, a runner-up, at the Open Championship. So Rory's a guy that if he could figure out the wedge game, then he might be unbeatable.
Yeah, he'd be right there, and with DJ too. And if he wins his first major championship in 4 years, his third PGA Championship title and fifth major, now we're talking about a guy that's back on track. Before he's even 30, who's had this extraordinary first ballot Hall of Fame career, and you put him in the mix going into the Ryder Cup with all sorts of momentum, man, that's going to be a lot of fun as we get to Paris at the end of September. I expect him to be on the front page of the board. I am a little concerned about the putting when it matters most, but I'd be surprised if he's not there on Sunday afternoon.
How about that? Two for the price of one. Taylor Zarzer and Mark Carnevale of SiriusXM and PGA Tour Radio. And when we return, host of the syndicated Augusta Golf Show, John Patrick, takes dead aim at the 100th PGA Championship presented by the Charlotte office of RBC Wealth Management, located in the beautiful tree line of South Park and Academy Sports and Outdoors. We are taking dead aim, presented by the Charlotte office of RBC Wealth Management, located in the beautiful tree line of South Park and Academy Sports and Outdoors. And joining us now, John Patrick, host of the syndicated Augusta Golf Show.
John, let's start with the venue itself. I had vague memory of Belle Reve, not from 92, but I remember that was the course that they were going to play the WGC event when 9/11 happened. And I remember doing a lot of studying about it leading up to that point, but I haven't really seen it since. I know they played an event there a few years ago. As far as a championship venue, don't know if you've seen it. Do you have any thoughts on Belle Reve?
You know, no, I was as empty about it, and I'm stunned that, wait a minute, you remember 2001, but you don't remember 19 or whenever they last were there. You don't remember that.
No, I don't. I think I've had a lot of discussions over the years with Curtis Strange and other people about the bizarre nature of that event happening in 2001. And I think even Tiger this week talked about the huge car ride he had. Curtis drove across the country. I think they were in Colorado, and he drove from Colorado back to Virginia. And he has a story about all of that. And so I think that's why that stuck out in my head.
Well, Tiger tells the story that it was on that car ride that really got him fired up about a foundation. That really got him fired up. He had all that time in the car to drive from St. Louis back to Orlando, and he thought about, I need to do more, and I need to do this, and I need to do that. So, but I know, I have a dear friend from St. Louis who talks about Belle Reve all the time. I could not have picked out a hole if you put a gun to my head.
I was the same way.
Now, and I've heard, he's been keeping me up to date for, it's been a couple of years, the battle they've been having with their greens. There was a time last year when the name Valhalla came up as a possible site for this because they did not think those greens were going to recover in time.
Well, apparently they had the same problem in St. Louis that we've had here in the southeast, in that I think their March was the coldest on record, followed by April being the warmest on record. And so it just, winter kill did them in, just like a bunch of greens. Myrtle Beach, half of Myrtle Beach is unplayable right now because of winter kill.
But this is a year long, this is a two or three year long ordeal that Belle Reve has been fighting. My buddy was telling me this, two Masters ago, that they were really struggling with the greens. They'd lost them one summer and they were getting them back. It's been a bit of a struggle for them.
It has a look in a way, I was thinking of a past couple of venues, it has some wide landing areas like Baltusrol, but it also has big tall trees and corridors like what they played last week at Firestone without the canopy. So I'm gonna let it ride out the week. I'm going to see what I think. But right now I think it's a pretty good venue. What are your thoughts about moving the PGA to May? I think that brings in all sorts of other weather questions.
Sure it does. Sure it does. And they've asked for those. First of all, I love the idea. I love the thought process. I love the players in March and the Masters and the PGA and then a whole schedule. I love that. But then they doubled down and scheduled it in some questionable spots. I mean, we're going to New York State next May, and that's the first thing everybody was talking about. And much like when the Super Bowl was scheduled for New York, I think somebody, friends of ours, golf writers, whomever, posted the current temperature and conditions in that second or third week of May this year to go, oh, and next year, this will be PGA week. It's dicey. And I was surprised. I wasn't surprised at the scheduling change. I was surprised then at the venues chosen for the scheduling change. They say this will offer up many more opportunities as the years go by, but it will be kind of odd next year.
Yeah, I'm hopeful. I'm very hopeful that it will open up some venues in the southwestern United States that normally are not considered for major championships because of summer heat. Some places, you know, maybe definitely in Texas and perhaps even in Arizona, Oklahoma.
Where are you from?
I'm from Houston.
Yeah, okay.
Well,
that's why we're having this Texas kind
of. Exactly. Had to drum up some business for the home state. You know, people forget that one of the reasons for the move of the players to May, one of the impetus was poor weather at the players in March.
Yeah.
And so now they're bringing that back into play.
And the course will be, well, what? Gambling in Casablanca? Hypocrites? yeah, and that the course would be in much better shape if we did this in May. And you know what? Let's go back to March.
Exactly.
When it's in much different shape than what it is now. It is funny to hear all of the people coming to rave about what the golf course is like in March. It's so it's much better. It's fuller. It's okay, fine. All right. Well, all right.
I guess we'll see. John Patrick, syndicated host of the Augusta Golf Show, is our guest taking Dead Aim. Let's talk a little bit about Justin Thomas. I think that one of the hardest things to do in professional golf, and we got spoiled watching Tiger do it, is to follow up a big win with a solid start your next time out. It's done very rarely. Case in point, Francesco Molinari is an Iceman at Carnoustie and then was just kind of meh the next time he was out at the Bridgestone last week. Justin Thomas was amazing on the weekend, especially on Sunday, closing the deal at Firestone. And as we're recording this right now on Thursday, he's doing a magnificent job. He's atop the leaderboard at the PGA. That's truly the sign of an elite, elite professional golfer when you can do that.
I guess you're right. I've never really thought about it down to the minutia of the first round of another tournament. I've usually thought about it in toto as the overall tournament, because you're right, but sometimes you're riding that high. Sometimes, you know, what I've learned from 10 years of talking to these guys is when you hear a pro say, I'm close and I'm playing good and I'm playing well, they are. And then they get on this roll. You mentioned Francesco or the way Justin is playing, you want to keep playing well. You want to keep it. You want to keep it going. To your point, we're recording this. Let's see how this ends up. Boy, if he could win Bridgestone and then turn around and repeat, that's pretty special. That would be pretty sporty.
Dustin Johnson atop everyone's favorites list this week based on what he did at the Canadian Open and then his Sunday round at Firestone. I've changed my opinion on this. I always said for the last two or three years that when all things are equal, when everybody is at the top of their game, no one is better than Rory McIlroy. I think I'm changing that right now. I think when he's firing on all cylinders, there's nobody better right now in all facets of the game than Dustin Johnson.
You might be right. I'm not there yet with him for some stupid reason. Everything came to a grinding halt two Masters ago when he was crowned the champion before it started, and he slipped on the stairs and he had some time to, you know, he took some time to recover, and I don't see yet today what we saw 16 months ago with the way he was playing. The thing I keep going back to, or think about when you talk about just how good he can be, is he's done all the proper stuff. He's worked the long game, not an issue. He has spent the last two or three years working on the short game. He's honed that to great perfection, and he's done all the right things. I don't know why I'm not sold on him. I'm sure it's that intangible of how much he wants it. I don't know how much any of those guys want it the way our heroes wanted it, because when our heroes wanted it, they were getting $45,000 for winning. These guys are getting $2 million for winning, and I just don't know how much fire is in their belly to win 5, 6, 7 major championships. I really don't.
No, I'm in complete agreement with you. I was talking with someone about this a couple of months ago, that I think in a way it's almost unfair of us to demand of Jordan Spieth, to demand of Justin Thomas, to demand of Rory McIlroy or Dustin Johnson, that they make the sacrifices that it takes to become what Tiger and Jack became. Jack's out there. He had the perfect life, perfect wife, perfect family. I mean, I don't think Barbara Nicholas gets enough credit, to be honest with you. But I think that they've been around for Tiger, and in the social media age and in the internet age, and they see the vacuum that he lives in and what he has to go through and what he had to go through, the sacrifices in his personal life to accomplish what he did professionally. And I think a lot of them look at it and say, you know what? I got a pretty nice life at four majors and making $8 million a year, and I don't have to go through all that. And who can blame them? And we shouldn't, you know, I don't know if we should demand that of them.
I don't think we should. I wholeheartedly agree. I may have said this on the show before. I think there was a complete 180 so many years ago when it seemed like Phil came to that realization. When I remember him sitting there at some press conference at some golf tournament talking about, you know, that he would have to triple the amount of majors he won to get to Tiger. He would have to double the amount of tournaments he won to get to Tiger, and that just wasn't going to happen. And you could sense in him, you know, but what I've done is pretty good, and I'm pretty comfortable with it. And I totally agree with you. I think it is a lot to ask for those guys, and I think we do take Tiger and what he did for granted. Okay, let's see that again. Good luck on that.
Yeah, it's just not going to happen.
It isn't. Well, not in our lifetime.
And another case in point, real quick before we get to some Ryder Cup stuff, Jordan Spieth is a unique enigma to me. I think that we expected too much. 2015 was a magical season. You only get one or two of those, maybe even one of them in your lifetime. And I think we expected him to do that each and every year. But even in a year like this year, John, where he is meh at best, he is a bad drive away on 18 at Augusta from perhaps getting in a playoff and winning the Masters again. He has the 54-hole lead in Carnoustie before, you know, he imploded mysteriously on Sunday.
I said it then, even when he was winning, I say it now, he is as good as his putter. And when the putting isn't good, I think it is the classic golf example. The rest of the game begins to suffer. He's pressured to get it closer. He's pressured to get it in the fairway so he can get the club to get it closer. I just think he is as good as his putter. I've never been incredibly impressed with his ball striking skills. I think he's got a great head on his shoulders, and I think he's got a wonderful common sense head on his shoulders. He's a great young man. I just think if he's not putting well, the whole game kind of follows behind, and he has not been putting well now for a couple of years. I mean, he was right there in the mix, but I think it's a sham to some degree. I think he's holding on with baling wire.
Maybe so. John Patrick, syndicated host of the Augusta Golf Show, is our guest taking Dead Aim. Sad news on the PGA Tour this week, but it reminded me of something that makes me very proud of the game that we love and that we report on and that we follow. And I'm speaking, of course, of the passing of Jared Lyle. I think that we forget how really close a fraternity the world of professional golf is. The players, the people who cover it, the writers. This was a loss of a guy who was not a major factor on the PGA Tour. He was out there for a year, maybe a year and a half on a regular basis. But, you know, they all share the same locker room. They all share the same hotels. They all get on the same flights. And, you know, the loss of one of them really affects so many. And I was blown away at the comradeship and the brotherhood that was showed towards Lyle's family this week.
You mentioned all of the human things that they do. I tend to think it's they share the game. They share what the game does to you. The highs and the lows. If you can make it out there, they all know how tough the road was. And then, you know, for him to do that, and let's throw in a couple of bouts of leukemia on that. They get it. It one of the great joys of my life, doing what I did for so many years in music radio, was 10 years ago doing this golf show and meeting the people that I've met in the game. It has been a blessing. These are really, really good people. The game, you know, good people are drawn to this game. And I had Jared on my program 4 years ago after he came back the second time, and he was just so excited, gotten married, little baby. He's back out playing on the tour. He was getting ready to play in the season opener in Napa. And I replayed that conversation last week on the program. It was... it's always sad. I mean, people are dying every day. People at 36 years old are dying of cancer every day. But it's just always sad. I love the fact that, you know, he wore that goofy yellow hat.
It was great.
And supposedly, I don't know how they'll do this or what they'll do, but supposedly many pros at Wyndham next week will be wearing this yellow bucket hat. I don't know if it'll just be a generic. Now, this is how I think about this stuff. I don't know if it'll be a generic yellow hat because it's got Titleist on it. So if you're not a Titleist guy, you're not going to wear a Titleist hat. But I don't know how they'll do it. But supposedly many of them will be in the bucket hat next week.
I think that'll be a good look. Okay, the Ryder Cup. Get you out of here on this. The Ryder Cup, a lot of things are going to be decided this week and definitely next week. The top eight as it stands, pretty much set, except maybe Webb Simpson could fall out and someone could move up. But what I find interesting is you get four captain's picks, and here are the people below the line right now. Xander Schauffele, Bryson DeChambeau, Matt Kuchar, Phil Mickelson, and lurking at 20 is Tiger Woods. I got to think if you're Captain Furyk and both of these guys are healthy, you're taking Woods and Phil, right?
Oh, I mean, so.
There's
yeah,
no way you're leaving
so.
Them off.
Yeah.
So then I would think you take Kuchar for experience. And, you know, he's Matt Kuchar for crying out loud. We need him at the ping pong table. But then who do you take between Schauffele and DeChambeau? Neither one will be earning their way onto a Ryder Cup team. Their first Ryder Cup experience will be a captain's pick. Or do you bypass them entirely and go with another veteran?
Well, as you and I have the conversation now, and we don't know what changes in the next 4 weeks or so, I think Schauffele is a safe, solid, respectable choice. I think Bryson is a wild card, and you don't know what you're going to get. So, you know, let's think about Jim. What kind of guy is Jim? I would bet, unless, you know, Bryson comes through and does something, I'm going to bet. I mean, Bryson DeChambeau is out there. I mean, there isn't anyone out there that doesn't tell you that's a weird guy. And I don't know how that dynamic works in the room. They may know better. I'll pick Schauffele. If between those two.
Always good to talk to and to hear the opinions of my old friend John Patrick, host of the syndicated Augusta Golf Show. Up next, to St. Louis we go and our boots on the ground, Ron Green Jr. of the Global Golf Post and Charlotte Observer, as he takes dead aim at the 100th PGA Championship presented by the Charlotte office of RBC Wealth Management, located in the beautiful tree line of South Park and Academy Sports and Outdoors. Hey, we're taking dead aim, presented by the Charlotte office of RBC Wealth Management, located in the beautiful tree line of South Park and Academy Sports and Outdoors. Belrive Country Club in St. Louis is the site of the 100th PGA Championship, and that's where I found Ron Green Jr. of the Global Golf Post and Charlotte Observer this week.
So, Ron, on the Ron Green Jr. scale of rainy days spent at golf courses, where does the beginning of this week rank?
It was pretty rainy. I mean, an inch and a half of rain Tuesday soaked it, and you know, they've been protecting this golf course. They had a really, really cold winter. They had a really super hot May, and, you know, I think it was 97 degrees here Monday. So they've had a lot of issues to deal with. I mean, they put messages in the locker room that they were going to have the greens ultra slow in the practice rounds just to keep them alive. And then they get gushed on. And, you know, for those of us in our era who are familiar with keeping bent grass greens alive in the summertime, it's a puzzle that may not have a full solution, but they've done a good job with it. But it was really squishy, and then there's nothing much better than getting those really good soaking downpours in the middle of summer and then have the sun come out on you about an hour later. It just feels really, really good.
Not very humid or anything, is it?
Oh, not a bit.
You know, it's funny about the bent grass. I have images of the men of Augusta National just sitting around laughing because the whole world said, well, we want to be as great as Augusta, so we have to have bent grass greens. And someone forgot to tell them that Augusta closes at the end of May and doesn't open until the middle of October. So that whole hot season that you hate with bent grass, they don't deal with it.
No, they don't. And, you know, I mean, I understand it here, I guess, because they also get the cold winters and the extended cold snaps here. And so trying to keep Bermuda alive through that, even with covers and all that, as we've seen around the Carolinas, is a bit of a challenge, too. And it's just been a tough year. But they've gotten the golf course, you know, I mean, the players have been very understanding and talking about they know what they're dealing with the greens. They get not much rollout, a little bumpy, maybe not as fast as they
are typically used to, but, you know, they're fine. It's not a big deal, and Sunday afternoon, somebody's going to win.
This is the last PGA Championship to be contested at this time of year, beginning in the next golf season. It moves to May. I find it ironic. This championship, with the exception of Charlotte, I think we got maybe a brief shower a year ago on Friday afternoon, but other than that, no weather problems. But every other PGA just seems to have gotten swamped in the last 5 to 10 years. They're going to be dealing with a whole other mess of weather problems moving to New York in mid-May, aren't they?
Well, it's interesting. People are talking. You kind of forget till you come to the PGA Championship that they allow the players to wear shorts in the practice days. And so a lot of guys have obviously done that. I think they would love to be wearing shorts on the practice days at Bethpage next year rather than layer upon layer. But I love the move to May for the PGA Championship. I think it is, as Zach Johnson said last year, he said, I think we'll look back the way the schedule has changed and wonder why they didn't do it sooner. I think the positives far, far outweigh the negatives. I think it will add. I mean, it's still one of the four major championships, but I think it gets a little bit under. It doesn't have quite the stature of the other ones, given its place partly on the schedule. And now, following the Masters preceding the U.S. Open, I think it's a transformative thing, I think, for this championship.
I believe so, too. I think there could be potentially a lot more excitement. Just like you said, by the time we get to the end of summer, it's almost a fatigue of things that have gone on. And I think there'll be a lot more excitement surrounding it for sure. Ron Green Jr. with the Global Golf Post and Charlotte Observer, our guest taking Dead Aim. As we're recording this, round one is wrapping up. I've been impressed on day one by a couple of things. First off, I think it's really tough to come off of a big tournament and a big win. And in fact, Justin Thomas was very emotional with his grandparents there at Firestone on Sunday. And then to turn around a few days later and refocus like he did. And he had it well under par for most of the day. I think he finished one under par after the first round. But to me, that's the sign of a truly elite player, Ron.
Oh, I mean, he is just great fun to watch, especially when he's sort of in full sail there, as he was at Akron. And I mean, he's won what, 8 times, I guess, in the last year and a half or whatever. I mean, he is a player who was, just number two in the world. But I mean, he and Dustin Johnson trade one and two back and forth for a while. I mean, he's got all the tools. There's nothing he doesn't do well. And I mean, like anybody else, I mean, sometimes you get a little dull edge in there, but I just think Justin Thomas is built for the long haul. I mean, and he's fearless. I mean, he's playing out there with Rory and Tiger with just a massive gallery following every step of the way. And he said, I guess I got into the Tiger thing a little bit the first couple times I played with him, but I've done it enough now. It's still fun to do it, but he's not awed by it. He's not distracted by it. And, and Tiger's loving playing with Justin Thomas and Rory. I mean, he was comparing it to back in 2000 when he played with Nicklaus in Nicklaus's last PGA. Nicklaus told him the story about playing with Gene Sarazen in his last PGA championship. I think it's sort of how the generation sort of passed down. Now, Tiger's not suggesting this is his last PGA, but he is of a generation of which Rory and Thomas are the next generation.
Thank you.
That's cool.
Thank you for bringing up Tiger Woods. He was another thing that in round one, I saw something that I hadn't seen in a long time. Nicklaus was great at it. Tiger was the best I ever saw at it, especially when he was grinding out that, 144, 145 consecutive cut streak. There were days where he didn't have anything in the toolkit, and yet somehow he was able to turn a 75 into a 72, or in this case, a 73 or 74 into an even par round to keep himself in the tournament. To me, today, round one was kind of vintage Tiger Woods.
Yeah, I mean, it could have been, he's standing on the 13 and almost out of the tournament already, and it's not even, still second cup of coffee time for most people. But, yeah, he put it together. He didn't have his best stuff, but he worked at it and made a really good par, I think, after 15, after he hit two ugly shots there, made a great up and down, and just kept going, hit a beautiful shot into 18, which was his ninth hole with a 7-iron to set up about a 6 or 8 foot birdie, and that sort of flipped a switch a little bit. And, yeah, he kept pushing and grinding. And I mean, it could have been, especially after the disappointing finish at Firestone, it could have just kept going the wrong way. But he refused to let it go there.
Ron, let's talk a little bit about the Ryder Cup. Things are going to start to get really interesting at the end of this week and into the next couple of weeks. The top seven are pretty much set. Webb Simpson's there at eight, and I still feel like he's in pretty good shape. But what is behind the top eight is where it gets interesting. You have guys like Schauffele and DeChambeau, guys who have not earned their way onto the Ryder Cup, but they're right there on the points list. And then three veterans lurking in the top 20, Matt Kuchar, Phil Mickelson, and Tiger Woods. You got to think, if you're Jim Furyk, if Tiger's feeling well and if Phil is feeling well, they're going to be on that team. Where do you think he goes with his other two picks?
That's a good question. I think that's, you know, it was interesting. Furyk did not ask, he said, to play with Tony Finau and Xander Schauffele in the first two rounds here, but that's what it is. Two guys who were on the outside looking in. Finau did not help himself with the first round, shooting about 75, but Schauffele hung in there, a bad start, came back and played okay, but I think he's got a lot of questions asked. You know, we haven't won a Ryder Cup overseas in 25 years. So do you take let's consider Phil and Tiger Gibbons. Leaves them two spots. Do you go with the familiar? I mean, Matt Kuchar has played a lot of Ryder Cups and is a good, solid player. A lot of people think he's not automatic, but very likely to be a pick, which then takes you down to one. You know, say the standings stay as they are and Webb makes it at eight. Do you take DeChambeau? Tiger sort of lobbied for him when asked about it here because he's played a lot of practice rounds with him. Somebody said, what would DeChambeau bring to the team? He goes, well, it'd certainly raise the IQ. which is true. I don't know. I mean, I think there's a lot of things. I think he's going to keep track of points after the PGA Championship from Wyndham and then the first couple of playoff events and sort of see where things go from there. He won't commit to saying Tiger's going to be on the team or Phil, but I think the likelihood is that's going to happen. But, you know, he adds Tiger, Phil, and Kuchar, the only rookie he has in Ryder Cup play would be Justin Thomas, who, you got to admit, isn't going to seem like a rookie. And so then do you bring another fresh face in to try to change it up, try to start – you know, they've got a good core of young players for the future of the Ryder Cup already. So, I don't know. I think they're going to crunch a lot of numbers. There'll be guys making cases left and right and all sorts of, you know, saber metrics and analytics and all that sort of stuff going into it.
I like the thought of DeChambeau raising the cumulative SAT score in the Ryder Cup room. That's great. Ron Green-Jugger with the Global Golf Post and Charlotte Observer, our guest taking Dead Aim. Get you out of here on this. We mentioned this briefly last week when he had entered into palliative care. I know that you had mentioned you introduced Jared Lyle at an awards banquet not too long ago, I think it was. Just some quick words on the impact that you've seen this week that Jared Lyle had on all the people on the tour that were there.
I just think I didn't know him. I introduced him to the Golf Writers Dinner in 2015. I think we gave him the Ben Hogan Award for having come back and fought through all he had already then. There had been two big battles with his leukemia, and then ultimately it came back in July 2017. And so I didn't know him other than to chat with him briefly that night, and he gave a very moving speech talking about his family and the support of some people and all that he had been through. And you know, I just think if you follow social media, particularly golf people, you could see it just the outpouring. Just so many people talk about what he meant and what a kind of spirit he was. People really, really liked him. Bryson DeChambeau donated the $25,000 he won from the long drive contest here to the family. Tiger's Foundation made a nice donation. Ricky Fowler changed his scripting to wear a yellow shirt. Lyle tended to wear yellow hats and wore that on Thursday, and a lot of guys talked. Pat Perez said, I didn't know the guy, and I feel terrible that I didn't because I've heard so many good things about him, and I wish I had. And he said, but I couldn't help thinking about him all day as he played the first round. I just kept thinking about how sad a story it is. He goes, you know, it's life, but it's just, you know, people say wonderful things about him. He said, but it was kind of with me through the day. And I think, you know, his impact obviously is going to continue on. I think it was such a public thing with the message his wife posted a week or so ago in advance of this. And everybody sort of knew what was coming, but, you know, I think you get the sense of how much he meant to so many people associated with golf.
From the Global Golf Post and Charlotte Observer, Ron Green Jr. I'd also like to thank John Patrick, syndicated host of the Augusta Golf Show, and Taylor Zarzur with surprise guest Mark Carnevale from SiriusXM and PGA Tour Radio for their time and insight. A reminder, should you just be catching the last little bit of the show, wonder what all we've covered, no worries. Subscribe to the Taking Dead Aim podcast at Apple Podcasts, and it will automatically download to the device of your choice most weeks, just minutes after this terrestrial radio version of the show finishes airing. Additionally, a great source of constant golf updates is our Facebook page. Be sure to like us on Facebook. Just search Taking Dead Aim. On the page right now, links to a story on Tiger Woods perhaps running out of gas, and another on where we are with the Ryder Cup team. Hey, weather-wise, you know the drill. It's sunny. It's warm. Summer days are long. Should be a pretty good weekend to tee it up and let this game continue to haunt our souls and break our hearts. And if you do put a peg in the ground, remember to exhale, swing, pose, and keep it in the short grass. I'm Charlie Nance on Twitter, at @CLT_golfguy, and I'll see you right here next week, Taking Dead Aim, presented by the Charlotte office of RBC Wealth Management, located in the beautiful tree line of South Park and Academy Sports and Outdoors.